Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello and welcome to IMP's AEW Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. A link is in the description. Read the Social Suplex newsletter. Shout out to Trish and Tim as always, and to every person who's contributed so far. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and here's your quick look back at the AEW week that was 30 minutes, if I'm lucky, of the Dynamite Collision 3-hour special on Wednesday and Wrestle Dream, which took place Saturday night. For me, I've spent all day just trying to chip away at this show because bloody hell, I felt like I should watch the Tailgate show. I said for the last AEW pay-per-view that I just didn't have the time to watch the pre-show thing, but on a whim, it got to Sunday, it's all aired, I've not been on social media or anything, so I'm genuinely not spoiled on anything. On a whim, I was like, I'll just watch the tailgate party. Little did I know, they did a very cheeky little thing, having the tailgate main event start the pay-per-view like really white hot. So turns out it was a very good idea for me to do that. Not time-wise, like bloody hell, I've watched way too much wrestling today. And that counts as my British wrestling person moaning about the length of an AEW pay-per-view. Just very aware that my day didn't particularly fit for it. So it was more like it was a show that took a long time to watch than it being a long show. All right, I eventually got round to it. But so much to talk about, and with so many matches on Wrestle Dream itself and the tailgate and with Dynamite Collision, I normally try and get through these intros pretty quick, but this week I really do need to get through this intro really quick. There is no way I'm hitting my 30 minutes this week, so I'm going to do my absolute best. Sorry to editing Imp in the future. So let's jump over to our week in Missouri. I don't know the accent doing Missouri. Kansas City doesn't sound like a place where they go Missouri. Well, to be fair, as an English person, I guess everybody's from Alabama. So you get what you get. And it's all right, my American friends have already learned me about the Kansas City that isn't in Kansas. I've already been told about this stuff. It happened around the Super Bowl. And I was like, what's going on here? What's the deal? And with Dynamite and Collision, two AEW buses arriving at the same time. Pretty certain that's a reference that doesn't translate overseas. 3 hours of Wednesday night wrestling. In a bit of a weird 2 hours Dynamite, then 1 hour of Collision, but it feels like the same show. So in my notes, I have written it as the main event is the Collision main event. But when you're watching the show, the actual main event, like the biggest thing to end the show on, ends the Dynamite portion. So it does feel like Dynamite and then 1 hour of Collision. I've listened to other reviewers where they were just more, they saw that as a negative, whilst I'm fine with it. Like, for me, it's okay. It's not the first time they've done this either. I do quite like it, but I guess it depends on how often you watch Collision. Me now watching Collision every single week, I really dig the vibes. I really get it. So to have that just be the like, 1 hour version of that on the end of my Dynamite, I am absolutely fine with it. Anyway, I said it wasn't going to take too long, and then I've immediately taken too long rambling about that. You don't have the time, Imp. So let's jump over to Dynamite from Kansas, Missouri, and we'll start with the thing that kicked off the show, which was Chris Statler and Toni Storm in a unique start to the show.
You know the truth. You just have to accept it.
Okay, some very powerful words.
Is this interview over?
Yes.
Good, meet me in the ring.
Opened the show with a backstage interview, Renee getting pissed at the two just dressing down for a fisticuffs before they even said anything. Eventually got them to sit down by throwing her own jacket onto the floor. Toni Storm was wrong about how she'd feel after finding her title reign killer, thinking it would fill her with inspiration, but instead the canvas has been blank. She's instead realised just how much the title means to her. Chris Statlander with some much needed character lines, explaining that her current self is an amalgamation of every version of her that came before, which to me I say good job, because I got that through presentation. So just to get this this, flat out just saying it straight to my face. It's like, oh, cool. That means you were nailing it because that's how I felt by physically what you were doing. Asked Renee if the interview was over. Okay, meet me in the ring. The two just up and walking with purpose to have a week of fuffle. Each drop to their knees, asking the other to hit them with the championship. But Chris don't fight like that, and Tony instead planted the title on Chris's shoulder with a kiss on the forehead. I love how this feud has continued to constantly just dance completely differently for how we're conditioned this kind of story is meant to be told. Like, at this point, they would just be coming out and just having a brawl in a different place. But here, we get the interview first, we get the explanation of character first, and then they politely go into their brawl. The thing I love about it is it feels wrong and out of sequence, and that's why I like it. That's why I feel like, oh yeah, this feels totally different. Was it the right way to start the show? I'm not entirely sure. But as a segment itself, I love stuff like this where it's just playing about with the format. Not everything's going to hit, you know, it fits into the category of just trying out something different. And I would massively applaud trying out something different than it just started, everything just starting to feel like it hits the same formula. Speaking of hitting a formula, Gates of Agony versus the Hurt Syndicate. I couldn't ever feuding Big Lads with another dance before their next dance on Saturday. A big bright side in this whole thing is that it's doing wonders for Khan and Leona. And by design, it felt like this was used as that final notch up for the dickhead of Richard's big boys. The spot that took Lashers out this time was a great big boy bump with him and Leona just charging at each other at ringside. Hurt Syndicate looked in a good spot, but MVP's interference actually didn't help things at all. The cane into the ring ended giving Ricochet the distraction room to spirit gun poor Shelton in the face. Bishop Khan just draped himself over Benjamin for the win. And if you know kind of the formulaic beats of a feud like this, you already know who's winning at WrestleDream. Which is a bit of a shame, but it does have, because I know there is a bit of ire against the Hurt Syndicate right now, but I have got this is that huge positive of Leona Khan genuinely being elevated by this. Backstage bits. Arguably the strongest night for the backstage bits ever. They were all quality. These weren't just your ordinary backstage bits. Jon Moxley and Darby Allin. With Darby in holding in Daly's Place own cell. Chat either side of a screech. Don't think about it, Matt. It's all vibes. It's all vibes, and it's the villain performance by Moxley. It's all vibes. Just don't think about it logically about what's going on. Think about the villain vibes. Darby isn't going to let Mox chip away at every little thing that makes AEW special. He's going to take the flag he carried up Mount Everest and choke John out with it. Mox just reminded the wee fire boy that the kid's actual enemy has always and will always be himself. Pac physically sent the message Mox's words weren't quite finding, and this played before the Death Riders walked on in for Clash. Claudia's match, which we'll get to later. Don Callis with his celebratory family dinner for his birthday. I love this. Takeshita on the screen promising to bring back the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Okada with a callback turning off the screen. Sorry, I pressed the wrong button. Hilarious that they edited in American crowd responses over the footage of Takeshita's NJPW footage. I don't know if there's a production or legal reason for that. Immediately I'm like, why isn't there any of the New Japan audio? Why is that not there? Why have you put an American one over it? It's just American cheers, which sounds entirely different to Japanese cheers. And then 1, 2, 3 at the pink out. I'm just like, why have you done that? In the grand scheme of things, it's not important, but they did do it, and I don't know why they did it. Like, is there a reason to do it? Does it just fall into the bracket of America's just weird? This is just a weird thing. Mercedes Moné interviewed backstage by Renee, name dropping the Danish promotion she just won the title number 10 at, donned herself Ultimo Moné, which was over her graphic and everything when it came to the pay-per-view. This weekend, she's set to officially become the longest reigning TBS champion, defending her CMLL championship in Mexico, and then it's time to celebrate. Eddie Kingston and Hook declared themselves as two tag lads now. We'll see that on the tailgate. Speaking of, Anthony Bowen and Max Caster interviewed by Alicia campaigned to Tony Khan to not team again ever again. Max Caster with, I have autonomy over my body and you can't make me. For me, an hilarious statement to make mid-tantrum. I talked about it earlier, but Claudio Castagnoli versus Roderick Strong, two of AEW's strongest, like, how do I phrase it, TV wrestlers? Want to confirm yourself an easy win via a solid telly bout? Trust in Claudio. I trust the old stiff back and forth phrasing. Trust in Roddy. So I mean this in the most complimentary way possible when I say that this is the safest solid telly sure bet of a match TK could ever book. I know we all think up top tier C2 possibilities, but this had an actual C2 match written all over it. Both lads able to hit such stiff strikes, but also so swift in their wee little transitions and counters. I don't normally sing about those details, but these two really stood out for me. They're just, you know, really good. Plenty of backbreakers to Claudio, a baker's dozen of European uppercuts to Roddy, so many knees caught by the Death Rider man, just so used to the list of three where the third knee would finally land and rock the Swiss villain. But no, he's caught the others, so yeah, he caught that one too, and won after a pop-up uppercut. Two good wrestlers had a good TV match. Who'd have thought? thought? Who'd have thought? Mark Davies, Josh Alexander and Hechicero versus Jurassic Express and Kenny Omega. Heavily tied Ibushi's injury into the Kenny versus Don Callis family animosity. Hechicero versus Kenny Omega was one tasty pairing. Please, Tony, please can you give me some more? The match built up to Kenny eventually working with Jack Perry and accepting the hot tag. But the secret build was the Luchasaurus and Mark Davies having their big lad dance. That's the real big match. Kenny had Davies done for, but Don Callis' distraction stopped the trigger from being pulled, and it was Jack Perry who got to eat the clothesline shot to keep the match alive. Rope walk into a doomsday device for the win, and Missouri got to dance to Tarzan Boy. Young Bucks after the match in their leather jackets because they're the bad guys. With what money did they buy those with? Tony. Kenny of all people came to Jack Perry's aid, and another wee assisted rope walk as the Jungle Man got to moonsault onto the Don Callis losers. I won't hit on too many notes because that feeds into the pay-per-view. Sky Blue versus Jamie Hayter, our mid-show Blood and Guts bubbling match. We've got a whole month till this cauldron needs to overflow, so no need to heat this up quite yet. As long as it's served hot, I'm perfectly grand to have these wee little matches just reminding us what dinner is on November 14th. Damage aimed on Hayter's taped up neck for the neck breaker, ad break lead, hyped into a lovely flash back and forth once we'd returned. Into one damn of a four-way into a suplex down at the ringside. That sounded like it was so damn painful for Sky Blue to take. This is awesome as Jamie amped up for the Hayter aid, just so slow. I took the piss out of it last week. She did it again here. Sky Blue had a chance, but a sudden lariat downed her, and a full Hayter aid wind up ended the last. Death stares from Julia Hart as she carried her stalemate up the ramp. Like, hooray for no run out or attack. Just, you know, dead, walked away. Jamie Hayter successful. She'll get hers at the pay-per-view. After the match, Tekla up on the Tron to hype the match at Wrestle Dream, asked for Jamie to impress her on Saturday. And our Dynamite main event, AEW Trios Championship, The Ops versus La Faction Incombustible. Hangman Page on commentary to giggle with Danielson, calling Joe an absolute Christmas ham of a man. Sammy is the one ringside this week, most of the buttons off his shirt unbuttoned, but no, that doesn't count as a ringside topless luchador. The rules are very strict, and no matter how unbuttoned that shirt is, it is still a shirt. The match itself had the ungovernable faction being all disrespectful to amp the Ops into acting out of step, but they're all far too well attuned for that to work. Especially the AEW Championship number one contender, Samojo reigned with such swift direct fire. If anything, it was Hangman's presence that had Joe wrestling like a man possessed. As soon as Joe was in, it was like it was only a matter of time till a man was gonna get choked out. A victory directly aimed at the AEW men's champion. Rush and friends jumped Joe and the lads. Hangman jumped in after Rush spat at him, but of course Joe didn't see that. Buckshot flipped to scare away the baddies. Joe picked up the AEW championship and the perfect final note to have him disrespectfully hand the bout back to the champion. Just a solid, quick little story that'll surely do nothing but a whole lot of good for Hangman's character. I wasn't expecting for a whole Samoa Joe character to spin out of it, and we'll get to that when we get to the pay-per-view. With so much wrestling to talk about, swiftly into the collision hour we go. Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia versus Kyle O'Reilly and Orange Cassidy. Commentary hit on Yuta Garcia as an odd pairing whose careers just pair them as natural rivals. So I'm hyping up that maybe this, they are the same faction, but maybe this is the pairing that might not quite work for the Death Riders. Orange's entrance this week had the video all pixelated, which happens when you don't wait for the footage to fully render before exporting it. I am all for these video editor issues getting more and more niche as the weeks go on. Like, hey, when I used Final Cut for my university project a decade ago, I had to wait for the thing to render after every single cut. Like, you've got it easy now, kids. I used to do cut, then just wait for it to render. Cut, wait for it to render. Oh, my MacBook was not was not the quickest thing. Mox on out for a wee stroll after the break. A front row view to Wheeler and Daniel not working, only saved by Shafir climbing up onto the apron to distract the referee from Garcia's tap. It feels like the machine is working for the Death Riders, but before the interferences came out, it wasn't working. And that's a little dynamic I love, that they can claim it afterwards, like it was a victory, and Mox can smile after, like, look, it worked. We all ran out together and got it working. But it wasn't working. And it required all of the gears to come out for it to shift right. Kicked into full multi-person faction chaos, Claudia made sure O'Reilly was done before feeding him back to Garcia. The Conglomeration Nation out for the attempted save, but the Death Riders beat them easily. Shafir even alligator rolled Cassidy out of the ring. Mox grabbed the mic with the ring all to himself to speak Darby Allin. The wee lad walked like a zombie down the ramp, and an hilariously great uppercut from Claudia which jumped from off camera. Darby or Bloody from the earlier pack beating used to display Darby's ability to just keep getting up and crawl his way to Mox, no matter how much the Death Riders keep beating him down. Once in the ring, that's when the conglomeration triggered to leave Darby and Mox alone. That AEW flag Allin took up Mount Everest, Mox displaying just how much that act from Darby got to him by snapping into a paradigm shift onto the flag. Excellent stuff, just all around. And spoilers, my tone of calling it excellence will not shift if I talk about the main event of Wrestle Dream. Megan Bain versus Hardy, Cameron, FTR and Stokely joined the Tall Strong Lass out. Long-term storytelling for Stoke as he now stands in a faction that has women in it. Crazy. His boyhood dream has come true. Aim high, kids. That was the moment I realised I've never heard Megan Bain talk, or I've just completely forgotten. Generic, I'm big and strong, you're stupid stuff, but fine enough. Another realisation of just how perfect this pairing could be for her, surrounded by folk who are all great at the mic jabber. Stoke eventually got Mike to insult Jet Speed, then Daxter hype FTR up as wrestling gods. The goodies interrupted on video with the backstage interview area. A wee distraction for Willow and Hardy to jump Bane and Jet Speed to show off Mike Bailey's kicks and Kevin Knight's awesome flight. The chaos left Megan Bain all alone to beat up Harley. Cameron summoned her inner Darby Allin, got her ass beat and just kept kicking out, but the running Liger Bomb called for death. Another win for the Tall One ahead of Saturday's tag match. And the Collision main event, maybe the whole show main event. Cal Fletcher, Lance Archer and Rocky Romero versus Mark Briscoe and Brodido. An ad break Macarena lead in as AEW knows their audience arguably too well. One day we'll get our big pop for Brody finally handing in his too cool badge and giving in. For now, we have Lance Archer, who gave it no hips. Where is Beast Mortos to give him dance lessons? Don't worry, Brody beat him up and I'm assuming that was the reason. Bandido as impressive as ever, teased power pressing big Lance, but the one to Rocky looked great regardless. This is awesome as the final flow action rapidly kicked on. That awesome pile driver knee combo looking just as amazing as always for the win, and poor Asuka took the pin. After the match, El Clone came out to say hola. A distraction for an Okada to Rainmaker and OK Rock on out of here. An absolutely fine go home show that hit all the notes that it needed to. Gave some solid wrestling as well. We'll talk about how much good wrestling have I watched this week. The amount that AEW served this week is absurd. It's a crazy amount of good wrestling. When you think about what we used to get served on a weekly basis, and now this is what we're getting. We're spoiled, I tell you. The other thing I've noticed as well is every now and then, because I haven't deleted Twitter from my phone even though I'm hardly using it, just because I now and then will go on it to answer a message with somebody who that's my only line of connection with them. Fortunately, not everybody has left it. A lot of people are still on the thing. When I do get notifications from that, it seems like it's mostly negative stuff. Like, it was something to do with how they thought that AEW as of late has just been a bit like off the boil and whatever, and I'm sitting here being like, I've been glowing like every single week. And if I've got advice, then I guess my advice is get off Twitter. If that's the vibe on Twitter, I'm not on Twitter. I'm having a great time. Maybe it's that simple. Maybe it's that simple. I'm not getting hit by any of the negativity. I watch it and I have a good time. No, it's not all perfect. Obviously, I take the piss out of stuff. Maybe it helps that I'm the kind of wrestling fan that's also absolutely fine with wrestling bollocks. And AEW has not failed in that department either. It's not all just singing about how great the wrestling is. They're also serving me complete wrestling nonsense. And I'm here for all of it. Anyway, yeah, a perfectly fine go-home show did everything that it needed to do. I think that's the main thing, is it set up everything that it needed to in a way really well. The strongest thing easily being the Darby Allin John Moxley stuff, which it needed to be given that it did main event the pay-per-view. And Hangman Samoa Joe, for me, goes into that list of great, really quick AEW stories. Not every title match has to be this big, huge, epic thing, which feels like there's so much on the line that the title champion has to win. This was very small personal stakes, and I'm here for it. The main event, that was about someone trying to kill the company. Everything the company stand for. I don't need an AEW championship match also telling that story. This, a really personal story just between two lads, absolutely fine. And 3 weeks, bish bash bosh. This is great. Anyway, let's jump on over. I keep saying that I can't waste too much time and then I just blabber on about stuff. Let's jump on over to what happened on Saturday. And I did watch the tailgate brawl, so we'll start with the tailgate brawl and then we'll go into Wrestle Dream itself. So let's get through the tailgate brawl stuff first, and then we'll play a clip for Tekla Jamie Hayter to kick off the actual Wrestle Dream portion. Tailgate doesn't need a sound clip. Isn't that great? Death Riders, Claudio Castagnoli, Pac, Wheeler Yuta, and Daniel Garcia versus the conglomerations Orange Cassidy, Tomohiro Ishii, Kyle O'Reilly, and Roderick Strong. Immediate fuck you, Yuta. In comparison, each of the conglomerators got a great little cheer. The most road to feeding tag match I've seen in a while, which is absolutely perfect for what is essentially a pay-per-view countdown advertisement. The Boo Baddies with much better synergy, but it was Claudio's no-hold airplane spin with Cassidy span on Big Swiss's shoulders that bloody well was the most impressive. In the end, Garcia distracted the ref, allowing a wee to save for Pac, and the man hit a wee Geordie Claymore like for the win. Hook and Eddie Kingston versus the Frat House, which was useful for later in the show, because otherwise I would not have known what the Frat House was. I don't watch Ring of Honor. I don't know what these lads together are. I know Griff Garrison from his Brian Pillman Jr. times, but I don't know the Frat House. I'm not a Ring of Honor guy. The Eddie heated star stuck in a box because of a picture-in-picture jabber from La Faction Inga Benable. Eddie spinning back fist knocked Cole Carter out into Hook's Red Room. Megan Bain and Penelope Ford versus Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron. A grudge match as an excuse to hype the Women's Tag Team Championship. Crowd properly woke up for this one. So great to see the division thriving and with so much depth and everyone this over. Our first This Is Awesome of the night after an Everyone Is Down sequence. Bayne fell to a tall wrestler's greatest weakness, the cornering post, leaving poor Ford all to herself and Willow Nightingale with a bay bomb for the win. And the main event and pay-per-view opener in a unique little play. FTR versus Jet Speed. Commentary talked about how there was such a short amount of time left till the pay-per-view started and the possibility of this still going on when the tailgate ended. I thought that when the first match went on for like 15-20 minutes, I'm like, oh, that's eating up quite a lot of time. Then I thought we'd get some like quick matches and then maybe the main event would take a bit longer. Like, I've watched hour long shows a fair bit, like I know these are flowed, but then the women's tag also got time. Or maybe it's just going to be like a sudden flash finish that they're talking about how FTR like to take their time, how their matches like to bubble up. Like, the pay-per-view's about to start and FTR are not a team where their matches end quickly. And my still WWE coded brain heard the commentators talking like that and I'm like, oh, okay, this is going to be a sudden flash finish. You're building up about how their matches go a bit longer, about there's just no time left, that surely this is a crazy scenario where we are surely going to flow into the pay-per-view. And my coded brain goes, you're only telling me that for one reason, and that reason is a flash finish. So it works perfectly to trick me as a properly unique start to a pay-per-view. But first, the action spilled out to ringside in an awesome pop-up dropkick flying off the apron from Knight as the countdown clock hit 2:30. Commentary constantly brought up how FTR liked to slow things down in the early going. And then the show generally just began, the pyro going off on the stage before just cutting to the hot flow tag that was happening with the crowd chanting for AEW, hey, AEW. And honestly, really smart. I want to know what this would be like for somebody who wasn't watching the tailgate. And that was nearly me, I only watched it on a whim. Like, when a critique of your competition is that nothing happens for the first 10 to 15 minutes of their shows, and yours is starting with the crowd hotly chanting for AEW as the tag match is immediately going on. It's such a really, for me, a really clever way to just combat your competition. Like, their shows take ages to get going, nothing happens. Ours have the crowd in a frenzy from the get-go. The very first thing you see is the hottest crowd just in the world. FTR and Jet Speed absolutely killing it. The match itself really took the piss for just how close the Jet Speed near falls got, with Dax constantly kicking out right before the three. A great wee spot with Folk flipping out the corner into a perfect Shatter Machine setup and Shooting Star Bayley knees break up. But in the end, Stoke grabbed the legs to stop Bayley from being able to kick out and stole the win. Also, an hilarious little thing after the match, as a kid on the front row got a little too into the heat and grabbed at Stokely to hit him. He also shouted out at Okada later, so, you know, maybe he's just a prick. Let's go with that. Let's get to it being a kid who's really buying into it, and that's something that the wrestlers really feed into. Or, part B, kids are dickheads. You can choose whichever reality you want. But that was the tailgate brawl, the nice little lead-in in, and did a really good job of getting it just amped for the pay-per-view, and it has some quality in there as well, so maybe, if this is this good, how good's the actual show going to be? And the, for me, really smart decision just to start off the pay-per-view that way. Anyway, let's play a sound clip for Tekla versus Jamie Hayter, which meant to be the match that kicked off the show proper, but ended up kind of playing second fiddle. Let's jump on over to officially, properly wrestle.
Well, Nigel, I think one of the most important things about AEW is, despite only being around for 6 years, we embrace the past, the history of professional wrestling.
From the past, perhaps now, to the future.
Before we get to the actual match, after the video package, Tony Schiavone was ringside with Lou Thesz's wife. We got a wee bit emotional, and maybe I was just having a sensitive Sunday, but I found that so heartwarming and lovely. A big commentary push of AEW being a company that genuinely embraces and celebrates wrestling's history, and a second chance to mention it with Hayter wearing an Inoki-inspired coat and towel. Plenty of Tekla baddie times in front of Charlie Thesz, as well as Goody Rock's dominance. Space for Hayter to amp up in spite of the hurty hurt. Backbreakers from Jamie had the Spider Lady unable to capitalize after a snap spear. Tarantula walk into the spear, instead met with the lariat, and Haterade for the win. Bubble and bubble we do towards November blood times. Perfectly fine opening pay-per-view match. Not as white hot and snappy as I know they could be. There's a lot more downtime as I was expecting. But I'm not really complaining because I'm looking at the show overall. It's fair to say I did get that. I'm caught in two minds where it's like, this is a much more solid character wrestling match than I was expecting. Where I thought they might be just giving the room to like really go for it. Instead we got a solid bubbling character kind of match. Those hot matches would come later. And of course this isn't even their peak or anything. This is a bubbling match. We're getting towards blood and guts. After the match, Queen Almanata out to hook her friend. Sky Blue and Julia Hart out on the ramp, and yep, no turn. Just another bubbling. Just another beat. There is no, oh my god, Queen Almanata has turned on her. Oh no. No, like, we're doing a blood and guts match. These are people staring down each other who are going to hit each other really violently eventually. Oh, okay. That's just, not everything has to be crazy. But this next match, this one's allowed to be crazy. Jurassic Express versus the Young Bucks. Insufficient funds. Transaction denied. An almost perfect setup for a big money match competition for 500k. Hilarious with Nick asking the front row fans for money. I don't know if that was a bit quite easy to miss, but it's the way they went to the crowd being like, please, like, you saw how much I've got. I desperately need this. And for me, Jack Perry is immediately feeling so over in this goodie role. But what a phenomenal joy of a match this was. Big pops for the Lucha Dinosaur doing Lucha things. Not the most notes for the start of this. Like, don't get me wrong, it was great. I was just test eating a delicious steak and leek pie for the pub my brother works at. So it was like opening portion of this match. I was eating a portion of pie, so not the most notes. Amazing hot tag spot with Bucks going for that rope bounce into a power bomb, but Perry knew the beat and reversed with a Rana and a dinosaur tag. And another great reminder of that Perry babyface fire as he flew with an assisted Hurricane Rana, jumping over to flip the poor Buck off the apron. The story being how the Bucks had to kick into the next gear, caught off guard by just how well Jurassic Express were flowing. Great little sequence starting with the lads up on the shoulders, throwing punches, and ending in a front flip cutter from Matt off the apron and a destroyer to Perry from Nick on the now free space. Made the absence of Luchasaurus felt, chopping Perry down with the camera shots showing an empty goodie corner. The Jungle Man's knowledge of the Bucks offense saved him, but forcing the Broke Boys to improvise and innovate isn't exactly a negative for them. They pulled out Lucha Bros' double stomp pile driver finisher into a near fall. BTE trigger dodged, but a big power up and second attempt had to bring the dinosaur back in for the save. An incredible sequence I'm not even going to bother to try and recall, as the pace just flashed in a burst of speed and destroyers. The Doomsday Device Escalera the goodies won with on Dynamite kicked out of here. The same for their steal of the Meltzer driver. Then such a great note with the Bucks digging into their own bag of tricks. Super kick party and BTE trigger kicked out after Jackson dismay. A new champ born as Missouri got behind Jungle Express, singing the Tarzan Woe and out perfectly into Dinosaur Chokeslam and Countdown to Extinction top tier finish. Job done, Jacksons. Jurassic Express lifted into such a good position. And with that done, the Don Callis family charge on out. The Bucks walking away is Alexander, Lance Archer and Mark Davies beat on down. Are you ready for this? Kenny out for the save and confrontation with the Bucks. No help from them, so just ran in by himself. Unsurprisingly, a Young Bucks pay-per-view match absolutely delivered. Again! they might have something about them, you know, these Young Bucks. Oh, and also, they have no money. Jack Perry tried to offer them some money, just as a little bit of a jest. And we'll stay in the tag worlds. The number one contender Tornado Trios match, Hurt Syndicate versus The Demand. Continuing the tag times, the Hurt Syndicate out first, because they're getting jumped. Instant Brawley offense with steel steps and tables saying hello. Two-man crucifix bomb sent Benjamin crashing into the table laid Bobby Lashes. MVP all by himself to get beaten up and bubble up that Hurty Men return to the action. Ricochet still takes the best of bumps off of Lashley. Big strong Bobby and the high jumpy flippy man is such a great pairing. A match that was broken down for the vast majority of it. An incredible spot as Shelton stopped a dickhead dive and German tossed him out overhead onto the pile of lads instead. Then a Shelton Topi that looked just as great as they were back in 2005. Does that man just not age? Eventually gave us Leona and Lashley having their big boy bash, but Benjamin's big knee transitioned us into the Ricochet all alone ending. The crowd responded, "We hurt people," in a perfect modern version of the "you fucked up." Bishop Khan pulled Richard out of the ring, took the bullet himself and ate a Lashley spear for a hurt win. So we were robbed of Ricochet finally getting destroyed by the baddies, but it feels like this should be Hurt Syndicate moving on, especially they're about to wrestle for the trio's titles of a newly turned heel, the Ops. So maybe the Ops have some form of retribution for what happens. Maybe the Hurt Syndicate are about to get championships again in the tag world. But the last thing I really want is the Demand to have a reason to go for them. It feels like a feud that really should have ended here. At maximum, Ricochet versus Bobby Lashley. I don't really need anything else. And by that I mean just get it done on a regular Dynamite. I don't need that to be built up to for pay-per-view. And we move on to the TNT Championship. Kyle Fletcher versus Mark Briscoe. Conglomeration Championship times. Honestly, a perfect transition of a match, taking from the fun of the opening few matches and melding it with the more serious tone of the blood feud and title bouts still to come. Don Callis, a very present commentator, and Mark Briscoe, a very divey challenger, proved his crazy state when taking a powerbomb onto the upturned steps. As somebody who's now finished the show. Yeah, the crazy was amped up just a little bit. At this point of the show, like, oh, that bump's crazy. Oh, innocent you. You innocent child. I then loved Kyle Fletcher using Briscoe's needed recovery time to just pose up on the turnbuckle as Don went for. Oh, look at him. Top Rainbuster stopped and teased into what would have been a mental BT bomb, essentially a super duper elevated razor's edge. But you've seen these two, right? You knew the crazy was coming. Dre Driller on the apron. Top Rope draped Kyle, later ate a froggy bow and tumbled to the outside to eat another froggy bow while standing. The crowd really ate the near fall. A third froggy bow surprised them with the Kyle kick out, which was a good sign because it was only going to get hotter. A grateful over finishing run, constantly teased between the J Driller and the sheer drop Rainbuster. Fletcher nailed a half and half suplex, but Briscoe rolled through and rose to his feet instantly with a lariat and J-Driller. That one really had the crowd. The Aussie just getting his finger to the rope. Referee distracted, kicked to the dick, and the sheer drop Rainbuster finally hit to the most convincing rhythm, sending Missouri alive with the Briscoe kickout. Love the Fletcher fury as he flowed unrelentingly and Briscoe just kept kicking out. None of that big selling the kickout shock, instead only taking a second and then snapping in with the next thing. I really like that as a note of a champion, whereas other people would be like, oh my god, how did that one not work? We saw it in a Mercedes Moné match later where the Moné maker and Shirakawa gets a hand on the ropes. She's like, how is she still alive here? And she starts to have a bit of a breakdown. Not Kyle Fletcher. He just kept going. Next thing. He keeps kicking out. Fuck's sake. Next thing. I just really like that energy. That running kick and sheer drop brainbuster combination, once again the winning pair. But that was an incredible end. Conglomeration out after to help their man to the back with an applause. Kyle Fletcher continued to have an amazing, proving TNT Championship run. AEW Women's World Championship, Chris Statlander versus Tony Storm. Unfortunately, this is where we got our usual AEW pay-per-view crowd fatigue, but damn for me did they wrestle it smartly. A wee slower testing out beginning, allowing the crowd their moment of recovery following Fletcher Briscoe, before Stat ran her championship power and they built from there. The first time since becoming AEW Women's Champion where Tony Storm doesn't really know where she is, and that fear Stat imposes placed Tony firmly in that fighting back underdog role. Snap moments from the former champion, but Chris had control for such a long stretch of this match. Finally, a draining moment when Storm found the chicken wing, but Stat found control and was scoring a near fall within the minute. Even the Storm Zero was stopped, hands planted and popped up into a dropkick in a full flow counter. Tony kept surviving herself, kicking out of after a beautiful 450 splash, but the Storm Zero failed to be enough afterwards, and into a flow of both ladders popping up after their suplexes, only for Stat to once again be the one to flow into control. The seatbelt pin, not the killer this time, but Saturday Night Fever, the thigh chop submission had Tony fully stuck right in the centre of the ring, just screaming at her, fucking kill me. A second Saturday Night Fever and the champion retained. Nye then banging on commentary about how this proves Statlander as a credible champion. When out came Ultimo Moné with the frat house chaps wearing all of her titles, telling Chris to get out of her ring. And as they swiftly transitioned, I will swiftly transition into the TBS Championship Open Challenge. Mercedes Ultimo Moné versus the interim Ring of Honor TV Women's Champion Mina Shirakawa, wagering her title for the shot. And with commentary so strongly hyping the possibility of Mercedes immediately losing the TBS Championship after reaching Ultimo status, the dive action wasn't exactly hidden, but I'm all for it. I'm so used to the other place where ultimate cocky heights such as this are always foretold an immediate fall. Just run with it for a minute. Let me feel this bit existing first before you bring it to an end. Run with it for at least just a wee while. And it looks like that's exactly what we're getting here. Joining Chancellor much quicker than the previous match swished flow. Mercedes on top, but it was like she knew she had to keep going, otherwise Mina would snap in. And that's exactly what happened. As soon as Mercedes slowly pulled Shirakawa to her feet, she was eating a spinning DDT. Just allowed to hit the three amigos, but the frog splash sucked, so knees for you it is, Miss Ultimo. Knee damage to set up Mina's figure four, and flashy spins just showing off. I guess the sling blade off the top rope looked gorgeous. Finally, figure four o'clock, survived with a roll to the ropes. Momentum swung with an apron meteora, but Mina kept swinging back, the spinning back fist just used to lock the figure four back in. Our final flow ignited by Moné getting caught with her feet on the ropes. That just survives title defenses thing that I've been talking about since I've been covering this. That light got switched on once again as the champion resorted to eye pokes and version of breakdown when the Moné maker was survived thanks to that Mina hand on the ropes, shouting, "You'll never have my title," as she chats shit before getting her face banged into the top turnbuckle over and over. Really leaned into that just surviving thing with the foot on the bottom rope to sneak the win. Mercedes then on the apron fanning herself in her, okay, I got it, I got through it, before dancing like she's the greatest wrestler ever a minute later. Yeah, she survives that, but just to remind you that she is also a cocky heel. I did like that. But the reason she got to do that is that Chris Statlander's music was the last to play. A pop-up Samoan drop sent Mercedes out and directly teased an elevation of the Ultimo's next stakes. Later in the show, Tony Storm was interviewed by Moné on the floor, completely out of it, till Mina came over. Two lost it all tonight, but we have each other. Aww. And would you look at that, there's a tag team tournament on the horizon. It's a big tease for Chris Statler versus Mercedes Moné. Like, if you want to be the true belt collector, then you need the true championship. I'm expecting that to be the big rhythm for it. And maybe in their minds, fans will swallow Mercedes beating Chris Statlander better than they would her beating Tony Storm, especially if you've just done it all in. I guess in their line of thinking, I don't want Statlander to be a transitional champion. I'm seeing all these different pieces. I'm seeing the setup with the Death Riders with the, and then the, what they're doing with Mercedes Moné with the belt collector stuff. And I'm just, part of me is just like, oh, I think she might be. It's like, it seemed weird when she lost the title to Tony Storm, but maybe they realise they want to get the title on Mercedes Moné, but they can't just run Tony Storm versus Mercedes Moné again because they're better than that. So what do we do? And they've come up with this, and they've set it all up with the Death Rider stuff to be a reason that could cost her the title. I feel like all the pieces are in play for her to lose the title, which for me makes it even better if she does win. Really elevates Chris Statlander as the, even though Mercedes Moné's got all of these belts, it's Chris Statlander that's the true champion of AEW. AEW. So you could use the match for either of those reasons. Speaking of championship stuff, the AEW Tag Team Championship, Rodido versus Kazuchika Okada and Konosuke Keshta. The AEW Unified Champion and the new IWGP Heavyweight Champion makes one incredibly overpowered team, in theory. No surprise when the tag champions showed the better cohesion, but the challengers' individual abilities are off the charts. You can't forget that Bandido is Ring of Honor champion and having one incredible year in his own right, and he did the most unique Rainmaker dodge, like down for what looked like a kick up, but instead did a leg split headstand, just kind of showing off, going, "Wahey, look what I can do, wahey." And I love that in wrestling, in that logic, it mystifies the opponent. So it's just suddenly this guy's doing a headstand, going, "Wahey, waha." And he's like, "Look what I can do, wahey." The spot they've really been building up to, Brody finally doing the Macarena, and I loved how the crowd instantly went, "Not now, no." Just properly invested in it, and they got immediately cut off. And a Macarena with middle fingers from Okada, and okay, even though it didn't make much sense from the good guy team, do the Macarena in a portion of the match where the bad guys could easily jump them. We got the Macarena with middle fingers from Okada. That's just totally worth it. Totally worth the weeks of build just for that too. I will now be doing the middle finger Macarena with my friends. It's fun for the whole family. I mean, there was something else that was a little more serious that was being built to. The baddies were technically working together, but it was done each time with an air of, "But you are a twat though." And Okada doing his middle finger spot drew out the first mini blow up, allowing Bandido to hot tag Big Brody. Woof, woof, cannonball and a kick out. Brody having to tag in a one armed shoulder worked on Bandido, and Okada having to tag in a man that he thinks is a twat. Like, both are equal problems. I think you'd agree. But any excuse to serve Bandido versus Takeshita for dinner is a welcome one. The gear properly shifted in a flow of something big happening within every 5 seconds. And what is an AEW pay-per-view without a reverse Rana no-sell for your own reverse Rana spot? Konosuke's deadlift German with Bandido flipping onto his feet looked amazing though. Team cohesion seemed to be winning out over the individual talent, even if Bandido was flying with an injured wing. Okada's neck worked on and surely ended with the knee strike pile driver combo that's been winning Bandido's matches as of late, until Konosuke Kitesha said hello. Doomsday Device teased, but nay, and the deadlift German impressed once again. Speaking of impressive, Okada's dropkick to a flying Bandido, like Jesus. Like, yes, it's impressive that Kesha has suplexed a large man like Brody like that, but Okada's dropkick to Bandido looked absolutely amazing. Shortly followed by all four men Germaning each other to a standing ovation. Bandido's fire forced the Don Callis men to truly try to work as a team, but the Rainmaker was dodged and hit to Kesha instead, with a smile on Okada's face as the IWGP champion rolled out to the outside. And I loved how that's away from Don Callis, so in their logic, Don Callis still doesn't see the smile on Okada's face after he's lamped to Kesha. Bandido one arm lifted Okada up onto his shoulders to crush him down. So damn impressive. No 21-20 plex because of the arm though, but with Brody's help the end was nigh. No recovery from the Rainmaker for Takeshita. Brody dived to the outside onto him, and a one armed 21-20 plex to Okada in the ring for the win. Now was the time for the Macarena. And the crowd went along with it as well and cheered. And I think I preferred that match to the Young Bucks one. Like, I love myself a Young Bucks match, but it was just something about there's different snaps in this match and the story they told with Bandido. Okada and Takeshita bubbling their story for me throughout the match was really well done. Just a top tier match. Like, everybody comes out of it looking great. It's such a fantastic match. And then on to the AEW Championship, Hangman Page versus Samoa Joe. Certainly a unique night when you can call this kind of match the calm before the storm. Started off where we left off on Wednesday with Joe urging Page to prove himself worthy. Hangman's less dodging Joe's offense and more showing his fight to power through the pain of taking it. Wrestling logic in full overdrive, but yeah, I love this kind of thing. Towards the end, shouting, "Come on, motherfucker," before laying in the elbows, amping the crowd up via that spark of life. The buckshot ducked and down with the coquina clutch we went. This the moment that Joe was talking about. Muscle buster, nay. Deadeye, yay. And one damn close near fall. Production nearly fucked it, but saved at the last as the picture-in-picture quickly left for the triple buckshot finish. Two of them rocked Joe groggy, the third finally grounded him, and Nigel commentary hyped Hangers of having proved himself. Then out came Hobbs, out came Shibata, the ops out in celebration altogether again. Ha, not. Joe lamped the champion and the ops turned villain. The earlier dodge muscle buster now used to crash the champion down onto the championship, as the commentator all like, "But the crowd are being so respectful to you, Joe, and now you've turned on them for no good reason." He was being a moany little git, essentially. But I liked how Joe had so much respect. You said that there's animosity there, but I was complimenting this feud of, like, neither of them had really actually turned heel, so it was totally believable after the match when the ops came out, they were celebrating together, because I was complimenting the feud on Wednesday, talking about, yeah, you know, they've done this, and they have managed to not have either of them really be a heel thing. Realized I kept saying Wednesday, I meant the Daily's Place shows, where they had the amazing promo. But yes, I don't know if this feud is totally done, using Hangers to truly get them some baddie heat. There's a strong possibility they'd lose lose their titles this midweek, and then into the main event we go. Okay. Okay then. I mean, none of us expected this to be, you know, a standard great little wrestling match. I quit. John Moxley versus Darby Allin, and here we go. Time for something completely different. And before I get to, like, just going through my notes for the match, for me, the transition from featured player to main event talent felt complete for the Little Mountain Man. As soon as he came out and the crowd were chanting Darby like they were, a bright flame for the Wee Fire Boy. The state of play quite literally laid out on the ground as Mox walked over and kicked away Darby's Everest AEW flag. Marina Shafir immediately got involved, then teeth-specific offense with Darby's fingers at his mouth. Darby, mate, what have you suggested doing this time? Like, Darby. Blood properly from the mouth of the ref over him, checking it all went well. I guess. Handle the steel steps and Shafir fetched skewers. Darby. And under the fingernail. Oh no. And the biggest of grimaces on my face as I reached an actual looking away moment. Like, congrats, lads. You've achieved it. I don't think I've ever looked away from a wrestling match. First time I did watch the Chono and Anita exploding barbed wire match from the Tokyo Dome. Because thinking that Anita gets like a really long gash down his shoulder, down his upper arm. And you can see him kind of like trying to hold it close. And I remember in my notes when I wrote about that match for Lords of Pain, I was just like, Imp goes to his happy place. Imp goes to his happy place. No, no, no. No, no, no. This is another one of them. To your happy places, everybody. Like, no, no. Oh, no, no. No, don't do that with the skewer, please. No, 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 no. Fair to say, this very quickly became another level of I quit violence than we were used to before we had AEW. So no surprise to say we danced with Mox hand offense after that. Darby was ordered to head and neck based fun. Like, hey, a nice opportunity to choke the man with the AEW flag. Mox then took the wee man's belt off of that. Ah, yes, so his shorts will fall down and he'd be all embarrassed. Of course not. Time to get to whipping. Red lines all over Darby's back after, as it just added to the fight back. Darby with something in his hands after. Lighter fluid. The crowd stunned as he went for the next thing. Being like, oh. And even an Excalibur on commentary making sure everybody at home was feeling the same way. Being like, well, remember the Molotov cocktail from Daly's place? Funny knowing the Death Riders would run out, he hit them with the mystery spray. I find it so strange what is and isn't allowed to be said for US telly. For me, there is no consistency. Mason Chloroform are the two on the no-no lists. Certain other things need to be absolutely fine, but Mason Chloroform, why does it have to be called, is Mace a product? Is it a brand? And you need permission to say it or something? Americans tell me, your country's weird. Taser's a brand, if I'm right. Taser, with Mox using it out of range to show us it's genuine ahead of the contact. That got a reaction. But the most vertical of paradigm shifts onto a chair got a bigger reaction. Wrestling. Death Riders all out for destruction and table setup. And such an amazing recording to the ECW arena from Claudio with his toss. Two tables set up ringside, just a tease, and the most insane toss out onto the announce desk. The replay from overhead was just insane when you just see the distance Darby got launched. Really upping what Darby won't say I quit after. Paradigm shift through those two ringside tables didn't do it either, with Mox then going just apoplectic. Like, I'm the only one who cares about him, shouting at the referee as he did everything to get Darby to quit. And now he knows what he has to do. An aquarium out in the ring and then filled with water. Commentators in serious voice as the riders set up to do a water murder. I've since been doing this AEW thing. Sometimes I write down a note and it's just weird. Because I had to write down a note I was never expecting to write. Shafir stood on Darby's feet as Mox held the man under the water, crowd chanting, this is murder. He won't stop even after that, and Mox is amping himself up for whatever the next thing is. The lights then go out. It's Sting! Undyed hair with it used on his face and beard. Shattered the aquarium with his back before turning his attention to Mox. Back toss to Darby, and he just carried Shafir out of the arena. Back to one-on-one, and we entered our final flow, which was totally normal, yeah? After all that, what do you do? What kills this match? The match with a pool of water amongst broken glass in the middle of the ring. A sharpshooter locked in, and Mox quit. With the commentator's cases being like, oh, he's in the middle of the ring amongst all of that glass. It's a totally unique ending, and it is within the momentum of the Sting buzz. So I feel like, momentum-wise, this was a point to end. And it's fair to say, unless you're setting Mox on fire, which you logistically cannot do, which you legally cannot do. So it is a bit of a, you know what? Yeah, this is just, let's hit on the momentum high and end the match here. Because it's often a criticism I've seen of other AEW stuff where you hit that momentum high and you don't end the match there, you instead have a couple more beats. Where, yes, it would feel like a match like this, you would really need to do something, like a really big spot to Mox. But this was the momentum peak, so I'm absolutely fine with it. Fair to say, it's quite a memorable main event. And coming out of it, for me, the most important thing, Darby Allin really felt like a main eventer. Like, this really felt like he had gone from that featured player role into something where he is genuinely a main main event talent. When it was floated about being like, oh, he was the guy that was being thought to defeat Moxley and become an AEW champion, I was a bit like, I mean, I don't know. Especially with him coming back from Everest, like, how would it? But this has convinced me that he could just be the next guy after Hangman. Like, if Hangman's the respectful champion and he's looking for, he get almost reaches that Tony Storm point of wanting somebody to step up. Like, at the moment, Darby Allin is quite on a momentum high. And I don't know what he does next. That should be the end of the Moxley feud. Like, what is next for Darby Allin? Anyway, that brings me to the end of the week. A quite incredible week of AEW wrestling. A lot of AEW wrestling. For me, WrestleDream hit. And as I say, I've not really been on the Discord this week. I've just been ultra busy. And I've not been on social media really much either to see much. I even stayed off Blue Sky today just because it took me so bloody long to chip away at this show. So I don't know what the reception to this show is. I'm completely blind. So it is purely my own opinions. Purposely stayed away from like a podcast or anything. So I genuinely don't know how this show has gone down. And for me, I thought it delivered on everything that it needed to. I should be less surprised that I'm fully enjoying these AEW pay-per-views. They're hitting pretty good. I feel like there has been an expectation set for WrestleDream where I'm not expecting it to absolutely blow the world away. But when you've got a main event like that and you've got a tag match like that, why would I be complaining? It's some exceptional wrestling on this show. Anyway, I am going to go and pop off to, not make future editing Imp's life too much hell. Anyway, what did you think of AEW WrestleDream? Is the internet complaining? Because I just don't know about it. Is AEW Dynamite actually in a lull like the notification I had on Twitter was saying? And am I wrong for just being happy? As a British person, that last part, the answer is yes. It's raining all week, Imp. You should be sad. You're British. Anyway, I'll be back this time next week to talk about a normal week without any skewers. Please, this time next week, talk about AEW Dynamite and Collision. So with that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated, never taken for granted. And with that, bid you adieu. Ta-ra.